Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Excellencies, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, I'm delivering this statement on behalf of the Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan. I want to tell you about a young girl from South Sudan whose ambition is to be an airline pilot. If she lived here in Geneva, her chances would be slim. Only about 3% of commercial pilots worldwide are female. But in South Sudan, she faces even more obstacles. Growing up in one of the most brutal wars in Africa, trapped in a camp, vulnerable to sexual violence, homeless, and without her parents. I want to see the world, she says, and make enough money to look after my aunt who's been taking care of me. There is no bitterness for a childhood lost, rather a powerful sense of what should be possible, coupled with a strong sense of altruism. We heard again and again from children in refugee camps who want to be doctors, engineers, and maths teachers, who want to serve their community. They should be the hope for the future of South Sudan. However, a staggering 2.4 million children are displaced from their homes. They live in sprawling makeshift settlements on empty land with grossly inadequate support in some cases. If there is a school, 400 children may sit in a class. Overall, 2 million South Sudanese children are reported to be out of school, 72%, the highest proportion anywhere in the world. If the conflict continues, only 1 in 13 children will ever finish primary school, certainly not enough education to fly a plane. The conflict has now spread to almost all of South Sudan, engulfing the equatorias that were previously peaceful and the breadbasket for this young nation. As the country fractures along multiple fault lines, ethnic and political, millions have fled. They urgently need the fighting to stop, and the armed actors, the signatories to the cessation of hostilities agreement, to abide by it so that they are able to go back to their ancestral villages, reclaim their homes, grow their crops, and tend their cattle. The longer communities remain dispersed, the more their traditional structures die out, their culture crumbles, and the economy disintegrates. In March 2017, this Council gave the Commission an enhanced mandate to collect and preserve evidence with a view to sharing it with the Hybrid Court, a Truth Commission, and a reparations body agreed under the peace agreement for South Sudan. My colleague Andrew Clapham, our team and I have been extremely fortunate to have been able to visit most of the conflict-affected areas in South Sudan, as well as see for ourselves towns like Malakal, Yei, Tarit, and Wao, just to name a few, which have been emptied of their populations. And then, of course, to see those people in refugee camps on the other side of the border. We were in a unique position for a commission in having this kind of access, and we are grateful to the government of South Sudan for making this possible and for the constructive engagement we had with many government representatives all over the country. Our staff have collected thousands of documents and taken hundreds of witness statements, material that will be invaluable to a prosecutor one day in proving command responsibility. The continuous collection and analysis of that evidence is critical to the accountability process. Our report focuses on 5 recent emblematic incidents, established a victim's evidence base, and collected linkage evidence in what has been groundbreaking work. We did our work based on the draft statute for the Hybrid Court of South Sudan, according to which individuals can be held criminally responsible for crimes against humanity, war crimes, and other serious crimes under international law. The Commission used a reasonable ground standard of proof. We focused not only on establishing the occurrence of violations, but also on identifying those bearing command and superior responsibility for them. And the opposition should note, too, that command responsibility is not restricted to state actors alone. We've identified several South Sudanese officials who may bear individual responsibility for serious violations of human rights and international crimes committed since 2013. As is customary with UN reports, we do not name these individuals, not least because we do not want to jeopardize any future judicial proceedings. Part of our mandate involved providing guidance on transitional justice. We believe that the hybrid court for South Sudan, stipulated in the peace agreement, should be set up